Morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Normally, we have young people come in and talk to us about issues facing children and youth, and the folks who were to appear had some things at school they had to attend to, so we're not able to have them this morning. So we'll just go directly to our council meeting. City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Item 1321, request of Harlan Hiltner to address Council regarding privatization of parking spaces and developers in the infrastructure.
Thanks for being here. When you speak, if you'd state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Harlan Hiltner. I moved to Portland in 1983, and I love this city a lot. I'm finding I love it a little less now. One of the main reasons that I'm here regards probably Sam Adams more than anything else, which is the privatization of the parking on the streets. I'm not aware how far back that goes, but I work for Delivered Dish, and I have to come in and out of downtown a lot, so I'm really aware of how many places, say, reserved. One example would be by the Portland Center for Performing Arts. There's quite a few parking spaces that are not available to those of us that actually own the streets. I think all people have an issue with paying for parking on streets anyhow, because we already own the streets, but we have all learned to adjust to that. What I haven't learned to adjust to is that any business or organization, from my understanding with talking to Sam's associate, has the right to literally lease the space next to it on the street as long as they're willing to pay for parking from the start of parking collection hours to the end of those. I resent that. I think it's a further step towards corporatization of this country, which I think has gone way too far. My second point is regarding development. There are those here that would like to see this city turn into a metropolis. I do not. We have not developed the infrastructure to handle the growth we already have. I don't think we can handle more unless we can develop the infrastructure to accommodate that. And I don't want to see us being in bed with developers. I'm a little upset about the South Waterfront development and the fact that we spent millions of dollars for the tram, which benefits OHSU, which contributed most of the money, and those that are affluent enough to live in South Waterfront. How does that benefit me? How does that benefit most of the citizens in this town? I'm not even going to use my full 3 minutes. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
1322, request of John Ryan to address council regarding assistance with contacting other city and state officials.
Thank you for being here. Please state your name when you speak, and you have 3 minutes.
Good morning. My name is John Ryan, and I'm here on behalf of myself and the city of Portland. I had testified.
Could you speak up, sir?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Is this better? I had testified in July regarding a similar matter. I'm appearing here today to address two items. One is a letter appearing before you, which I would like you to read, of course. And then the other one is the Palantiri, which is a, as I have said, a uniform basis for communication and judgment. The good news first is that is functional. It works. I can solve a nonlinear problem with it, which I won't explain what that means in the brevity of this forum. But I have demonstrated that it works. I haven't released that data yet, but it's good to know that we were well represented at the recent sustainability conference in Chicago. This could be one of the uses for this. I haven't released this information as of yet, but we can view basically something that's the energy of knowledge. and that would be of tremendous use to the city and to people in general. I'm asking also, there's two requests here today, that you could read the first part of this letter perhaps now, and I'm asking for some assistance in arranging a meeting perhaps with one of yourselves and then following on with some other people that are mentioned in the letter. So if you could take a look at that at the present time, that would be very appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
Item 1323, request of Glenn Owen to address council regarding impeachment of national officials.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
I'm Glenn Owen, one of several hundred thousand voters you serve as members of the City Council. Monday evening this week, Cynthia McKinney spoke at First Unitarian Church in downtown Portland about her reasons for seeking the Green Party's nomination for President of the United States next year. That presentation included scathing remarks on the decay of America's entire process of electoral politics, the shape and scale of her doubts about the preposterous official account of the events of September the 11th, 2001, her recognition of the neutralization of any pretense of civil liberties and rights to personal and family privacy, a pattern of corrupt institutions designed to install a tyrannical and uncontrolled fascist police state, not only in America, but in its rapidly growing stable of satellite countries around the world, the secret and illegal application of advanced, undisclosed, and lethal technologies in the civilian sphere on a global scale, the coercion of the American political economy into a permanent, aggressive war structure in defiance of universally applicable and firmly founded principles of international law, and in denouement, cited the humiliating stench of cowardice and corruption of America's elected leaders in their failure promptly to bring impeachment remedy to all of the above. Gentlemen, you may correctly infer that you, sitting as City Council of Portland, Oregon, are among those elected leaders who have abrogated their absolute personal sworn obligation to uphold the tenets of America's system of constitutional government against incursion by all enemies, foreign and domestic, and in the event of any return to democratic process for choice of political leaders in America, you will face the voters' wrath accordingly. All credible polls show that an overwhelming proportion of your constituents in Portland, Oregon, not only want their national, ostensibly elected leaders to enact articles of impeachment for the criminal syndicate that now rules America and the world, they also want the forthright participation of this City Council in that process of desperately needed reform. A resolution to that effect has been before this Council since May 10th of last year. And since that time, this Council has addressed and resolved many issues of critical local importance. But in the one issue that threatens our entire American way of life in this city, you have dishonored your oath of office. We of the 9/11 and related truth movements in Portland and Oregon are no longer so naive as to ask for your leadership in a matter so fraught with such grave personal and political risk to the incumbent holders of elected office. We merely ask that you accede to the clearly expressed and fervent desire of your constituents to support, resolve, and advance the only process that can reverse the transparent drive to despotism and tyranny in this city, state, and country that we love so much. I am Glenn Owen, and I am solely and personally responsible for the content of these comments.
1324, request of J.D. Cook to address council regarding civic rule, civil rights, and constitutional responsibilities.
Thank you for being here this morning. If you'd state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Good morning, men. My name is Jeff Cook, J-E-F-F-C-O-O-K, no G, no E.
I live at 101 Morris in North Portland. My phone number is 503-449-0781. You can send all heat mail, correspondence, and queries to Jeff in North Portland at the Yahoo. Gentlemen, I came to you on the 31st of October about a very important issue involving life and death in our community, on our streets, and at our intersections. And no, Mr. Adams, my testimony did not involve a single bicyclist. However, I found a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. Apparently, it all started, Mr. Mayor, with a man who refused to remove his hat. I found that the citizens of our city must now act as supplicants and appear downstairs 7 days in advance and sign up and sign in and run a synopsis or an idea past the council and then go home and sleepy-sleep on it for 7 days. This is the equivalent of icing the kicker. And that, by the way, is a football reference, Mr. Adams. What this is access delayed, is access denied. I need to read from you, it seems, from our most valuable, most sacred, most holy United States document. The first three words in our most holy document in this country, the controlling document, the third word is not cabal. The third word is not moneyed interests that pepper this audience. The third word is not thugs with which you filled our police forces from all over this country in the past several years. The third word is people. The people in this country are sovereign. We set it up. Now I have to move along because I have to move to the First Amendment of the Constitution. This is in one of your inserts as well. And I read you, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of the people to petition the government. You are taking liberties with our liberties by dint of this rule, gentlemen. I say guardedly. You are, by dint of this rule, illegitimate leaders. By dint of acquiescence to or approval of this rule, the dais upon which you sit in our chairs is made of sand. You are taking liberties with our liberties. You can go on to abridgment. It's simple. Curtail. Now, it seems I have a lot of papers here, so I have some more important things to say. Most importantly about this particular rule of icing the kicker, the citizen becomes supplicant. Most important is that it appears to be moving hand in glove with this eruption of the tyranny of fascism that is oozing out of our nation's capital. And I will not have our city council work hand in glove with those who would deny our liberties. Mr. Mayor, I urge you strongly, hire the artist contractor, maybe me, to paint the stars upon the ceiling of this curious star chamber. Even more importantly, Mr. Mayor, I urge you, tear down this rule. I guess I'm done. I'm over. Thank you.
Is that it?
That's all for the communications.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll move to the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Does any member of this audience wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
We have a 10 o'clock time certain. It's about 10 till. So perhaps we could go to the regular agenda and start on some of those. So the first one, could you read item 1348?
Expand prohibition against smoking to exterior of city buildings.
Mr. Leonard, did you want to address this?
I've introduced this on behalf of the Office of Management and Finance. Tom, did you want to say anything? Or Sarah in my office has been working on this as well.
Good morning. Tom Feely from the Office of Management and Finance. Thank you for introducing this for us. This ordinance seeks to ban smoking within 50 feet of the entrances to city buildings, basically. Right now, we do ban smoking within the building and within city fleet vehicles. We have received an increasing number of complaints from city employees about other employees smoking, especially in the loggia of the Portland building, just outside the entrance. Gotten concern from parents of city kids that smoke is wafting into the children's play area outside. Oregon law will change in January of 2009 to actually implement this, but we'd like to go ahead and do it now, essentially at our local level. It's certainly reflective of the wellness initiative coming out of VHR and the benefit program. And like I said, responsive, just really an increasing number of complaints from city employees. And I think as more and more information has come out about the impacts of secondhand smoke, employees have become more and more concerned. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you.
I was curious if you've ever thought or looked into the idea of having an established area where employees could smoke that wouldn't interfere with people accessing and egressing.
Yeah.
I guess I was thinking mainly the parking garage beneath. Is there any kind of a possibility that an area could be established that would be undercover? I guess that's...
Yeah, we have looked at that. We looked especially at the loggia, but unfortunately, pretty much every area, it's either like right outside the restaurant, right outside the store, near the entrance, or near City Kids. I mean, it just doesn't appear to be a sort of a reasonable place to put that. And the garage right now is not open to the public, essentially. So, I mean, it does have a certain level of security.
I guess we're primarily talking about city employees, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean, we could look at that, but I don't know that that's the answer, because other city employees park down there, and I think we'd run into some of the same issues.
Yeah. Well, I would appreciate it if you could at least look at that. I mean,
sure.
I think that I understand certainly all the impacts of secondhand smoke and health and wellness issues, but especially with winter coming around the corner, I'm thinking of employees standing out in the raw elements.
I understand.
I haven't looked in the Portland garage in a long time, but if there is somewhere that's ventilated and could work, even if you have to sacrifice a parking space or two, it might.
Yeah, we can look at it. Sure.
Because isn't the basement set up for exhaust fumes from vehicles? I would assume there would be a system to expel the exhaust fumes.
To some extent, yes. Yeah, we can look at it.
Because if there is, I agree with Commissioner Saltzman, if
right.
we can reasonably accommodate them and not, I mean, my issue isn't trying to so much go after smokers, it is to protect people who don't smoke.
And that's our concern, too. Yeah,
they can go to the basement, and I would think that if they're city employees and have a ID card, that should be sufficient to allow them entrance down there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something you can look into and get back
to us? We've kind of, Sarah's been my resident expert on this. Maybe we can work on that and then come back and let everybody know how that turned out.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions from commissioners? Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. I think 1349 is going to take a little longer. What about 1350? Could you read item 1350? Is the city attorney's office here to discuss this issue?
Yeah.
Okay.
1350?
1350.
Pay claim of estate of Raymond D. Guerter.
I'm David Landrum, deputy city attorney from the city attorney's office.
Would you like to proceed?
Yes,
you know,
sir.
Considering the nature of this, how many people have signed up to testify on this matter?
I didn't have anyone sign up.
Dan Hanlon's.
We do have one person who does want to speak.
Okay, go ahead and proceed.
Sure.
Okay, please proceed.
Thank you, Mayor. What I'm here to do is to recommend to the council that the city settled this case, the state of Raymond Guerter et al. Versus the city of Portland et al. It's a federal case.
Dave, can you pull your mic down just a bit?
Has to do with police shooting that took place in November of 2005, and Mr. Guerter was killed in that shooting.
and we have negotiated in good faith with the plaintiffs and reached an agreement whereby we can settle a case for $500,000 inclusive of all costs and fees.
And for the record, why are you recommending this?
Well, this instance involved the Special Emergency Response Team, CERT, and the Hostage Negotiation Team, HNT. And what we learned from this event is that our response could have been more effective. The Police Bureau has made some serious changes since that time that we believe will produce a better, more effective response to these kind of emergency call-outs in the future, but that doesn't change what happened that day. City regrets that Mr. Roeder was killed, and I think it's probably the right thing to do for our city, our police bureau, and the Roeder family to resolve the case rather than try it. Moreover, I think that although the city had a defense to mount in this case, there is enough significant risk that we might not get a verdict that we think appropriate, and it's better to avoid that risk by resolving the case.
Is the chief here?
She may have assumed that it was going to be after 10 because of the time certain at 10.
She was going to be here, so...
I would just as soon hold it over and give her an opportunity to talk.
Okay. We'll just put this in abeyance then. So thank you, David. We'll call you back up in just a bit. Let me...
I think I'm recognizing some houseboat folks out here. I wonder if...
Okay.
If, is everybody here? Can we go ahead? We're about 3 minutes early. Okay. I think we can go ahead.
Please read the 10 a.m. time certain.
Item 1325, adopt changes to Title 28 floating structures to improve clarity and enforceability and formally add the River Community Advisory Committee to assist in administration.
Thank you, Mayor Potter and members of the council. This is an update of the building code title 28 for floating structures, and it's something we've been working on for some time with the idea in mind, and floating structures specifically meaning houseboats and moorages. And we've been working for some time to clarify language within Title 28 to make it more enforceable and understandable, and there has been some reasonable questions about whether that exists currently. And it formally creates the River Community Advisory Committee with stakeholders that can be ongoing people who either earn a living or live on the river and can help us in the future making further amendments to Title 28. So we have Lori Graham here from the Bureau of Development Services. Do you want to mention any things or just be available for questions?
Thank you, Commissioner Leonard. Lori Graham from the Bureau of Development Services. And I had my whole written speech here, and Commissioner Leonard just covered it very nicely for me. So
sorry.
I will, no, that's fine. I do understand there are members from the river community that are here to address this issue and address you. I will be available for committee or for any questions. I do want to say an official thank you to Jim Harris, who started this process a couple of years ago, started a very open, broad process and has since retired. So that's why I'm here today and not him. But I did want to thank him officially for his work on this project. And I'll be available to do my best to answer any questions that you may have.
Great, thanks. So I'm assuming we have a sign-up sheet.
Yeah. Okay. Come up three at a time. We have Tom Stringfield, David Grant, and Jan Hammer.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Good morning. I'm Tom Stringfield. I'm a member of the Citizens Group or Stakeholders Group that worked with the Bureau of Development Services to develop this revised code. I'm here first to express my support for the revision and to urge the Council to adopt it. Secondly, on behalf of the stakeholders, I want to second what Lori said with respect to Jim Harris. During the nine-month period when most of the work was done, which happened in late 2004, early 2005, our group met with Jim every few weeks for that entire nine-month period. He took technical input from us, incorporated into the code. He inspired everyone's confidence, and the result is a very cooperative effort between the city and the stakeholders, the citizens. I'd like to introduce David Grant sitting next to me, and though his kids might complain about it, I'd like to think of him as the father of Title 28. He's been a floating structures contractor for about 30 years around the city. Before the late 80s, there was no floating structures code. There were no regulations. David lobbied for a code back then and was a key player in the original draft, which was completed in the early 90s. In 2004, David saw that some revisions would be a big help and lobbied for those and led the citizens' effort to help bring it about. So I'd like to thank David as well for his efforts. Your turn.
Thank you. My name is David Grant. I live in Dykeside, Moorage, and Scappoose, and I had the privilege and honor to serve as the state chairperson for the stakeholders group. Title 28 was originally brought about by members of the floating community when we foresaw a need to have some kind of structure and standards in the construction of mortgages and floating homes. That was done in about 1990. The revision was brought about when it was realized that to get a better code and a more up-to-date code that we would have to, as a community, come to the city and ask for revisions. We did that starting in 2004. There were 25 volunteers that served on the stakeholders group. It seems a little large, but we kind of just said anybody that wanted to come in and contribute was welcome. This group of people included architects, engineers, contractors, mortgage owners, marina owners, boat owners, yacht club members, and just people who owned houseboats that wanted to learn about what the code was like. I guess I should stop and say floating homes, since we've changed the name of houseboats to floating homes during the revision. These people put in 2,500 hours of their own time, and the result was a pretty good code, we think. I'd like to recognize some of them today, if I may, if they'd stand when I call their names. Of the 25, the people who are able to come today are Bob Wilson of Tai Yacht Club, Randy Olson of Ducks Moorage, Eric Gazow of Portland Yacht Club, Ket Moulton of Dykeside Moorage, Brad Houghton of Columbia Crossings, and I think I missed anybody yet. I got it. I would like to thank the Harbor Master who's here today. We have a new Harbor Master since the code was worked on. He was now Ray Pratt. The previous Harbor Master was Chris Payne, who attended almost every meeting. To single out two people in particular, Tom Stringfield of Rose City Yacht Club and Portland Yacht Club, worked on revisions, and his ability in correcting punctuation and grammatical errors and also his input was just amazing. Hundreds and hundreds of hours he spent. And the coordinator of everything for the group was Miss Martha Bailey from Oregon Yacht Club. She's back here, and she did all the typing and correlated all the revisions we came up at both the meetings that were held as a stakeholders group and as the group with the city representative. One further thanks is to Tykovich from Commissioner Leonard's office, who when the process slowed down, we went to Commissioner Leonard and his office, and Tykovich gave us a tremendous amount of help in getting a stalled process up and running. A big thank you to Ty. Now I'd like to introduce Jan Hamer, who will complete the process.
Good morning, Mayor Potter and members of the commission. My name is Jan Hamer, and I'm general manager for Jensen Beach Mortgage. What I want to do is highlight the importance of the updated Title 28 to the entire waterfront community because it maintains and sets a high standard for construction and maintenance for all floating structures, including boathouses, which we haven't mentioned this morning. And it will also be the model for surrounding floating industry such as Gresham, Scappoose, and St. Helens. They've all expressed a real strong interest in adopting it or a very close version of it. And lastly, we need council support to BDS to complete the remaining elements that Randy mentioned when he started, which was to establish the advisory committee to help the director work out the certifying process for the city inspectors to train them, and then staff the Floating Structures Appeals Board to resolve the differences. Those are really important. And in closing, we would like those elements to not take so long and have so many delays as we've had in the past so that we can get that going right away. And we, the stakeholders as a group, ask you to adopt this new code this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Would folks sign up to testify?
We have one more person, Brad Houghton.
Good morning, Mayor.
Councilman.
Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
I will. Brad Houghton, Columbia Crossings. I had the opportunity to participate as a stakeholder in this process as well, and I think this is a long overdue improvement to the city's building codes, and expect that it will represent a further acknowledgement of the value of the waterfront activities in Portland and its contribution to the livability of the city. I think it's a thorough and well-constructed document. It'll raise the standard for all of Portland's waterfront and recreational boating facilities, as well as the floating home communities, and should also improve the general safety of Portland's boaters and floating home residents, make the river's more attractive playground for the city's residents. We support the ordinance, and we hope that you'll pass it and also move forward to set up the advisory committee that's been suggested. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all who signed up.
Okay. Any discussion from council? Non-emergency and moves to a second reading.
If we're not going to vote, I just want to thank all of these gentlemen that are here. This really, for a lot of people, may seem like a technical update, but the reason they're so interested in here is because they've experienced what happens when there is a fire in a moorage, fires in moorages, as opposed to on land. Because of our building codes today, it's very unusual to have a fire go from one structure to another on land. It is actually fairly typical in a moorage to have a true conflagration when you have one structure catch on fire. So it's not unusual to have multiple structures catch on fire, trap people because of the access. It can really be horrendous conflagrations. And so recognizing that, these folks have come forward with asking that we set up regulations to minimize the risk to the folks that are living down there and recreating down there. So I appreciate very much your work. This has been great. And we'll get on the advisory committee right away and get that done. Thank you.
Okay, this is not emergency. It moves to a second reading. Please read item 1349.
Tentatively uphold the appeal of Eric Reistad, applicant, with conditions and overturn hearing officer's decision to deny a 73-unit plan development with modifications to landscaping, setbacks, height, and loading spaces at 4027 Southeast 174th Avenue, LU 06-185-546, PDM.
Council has before them findings. I need a motion to adopt the findings and grant the appeal, overturn the hearings officer's decision, and approve the applicant's proposal based on the findings and conditions that are before the council.
So moved.
Need a second?
Second.
Please call the roll.
Adams?
Aye.
Saltzman?
I'm going to recuse myself because I wasn't here for the original hearing and I haven't studied the record.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. I think item 1351 is also a police claim, isn't it? Settlement?
Looks like it.
So let's hear item 1352.
Adopt the budget calendar for fiscal year 2008-09.
Staff? I guess we're ahead of everybody's schedule, aren't we? This is the budget calendar. I don't know if folks have questions. We can hold off on this, but this is what was agreed to. They came around to the different commissioners' offices.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anyone signed up to testify on 1352?
I did not have a sign-up sheet for this.
Is there anyone who wishes to testify to this matter? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
I think the calendar looks good. Aye.
Potter?
Aye. 1353.
Adopt City of Portland investment policy.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank Stranger.
You. Good morning, Mayor, members of council. David Thurman, City Treasurer. The resolution before you will authorize the adoption of the city's investment policy. The adoption policy is part of our annual process whereby the Office of Management and Finance and the City's Investment Advisory Committee review and recommends changes as needed. All recommendations are then forwarded and reviewed by the State of Oregon's Short-Term Fund Board, which advises local governments on investment matters. All policy recommendations before you today have been reviewed and approved by the City's Investment Advisory Committee as well as the Short-Term Fund Board. The policy change recommendations are highlighted in the in your materials, the most notable of which is the incorporation of securities lending policy, which will enable the city to earn additional income by lending securities to select financial institutions. This portion of the policy has been developed for some time, has been in development for some time, and we've worked closely with the Investment Advisory Committee and the state to develop a policy that fits within the city's conservative risk profile while enabling the city to potentially generate additional income for city bureaus. In developing the policy, we took a conservative approach with the full understanding that this will limit the potential for additional income, but nevertheless remains consistent with the prudent strategies we've utilized in the past. So with that, I'd be more than happy to take any questions.
Are you saying you don't need our investment advice this morning?
Sure, I'm open to ideas always.
So this is short-term investments, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And when we were talking about it the other day, you mentioned that it'll generate approximately $200,000
a year. Yeah, we're estimating between $100,000 and $300,000, depending on market conditions, of additional income for bureaus. So we believe it's a worthy program to pursue.
In that case, I won't give you any advice.
Thank you. Is anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet for this item.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter?
Excuse me.
Resolution, please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Good work. Mr. Treasurer?
Aye.
Sten?
I just want to thank the treasurer. I think that this may be the position that's the quietest and the most important that nobody knows about. He makes us a lot of money safely, and we're happy to spend it. So thank you. Aye.
Potter?
This is, I think, a good and prudent investment for the city. Because it does not provide any risk to us, but it does generate additional income, which the city can always use. So thank you, Dave, for your efforts. We don't get to thank you very often, but we really appreciate what you do for our community. Aye. Please read item 1354.
Authorize mortgage revenue bonds and a mortgage credit certificate program.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Stan?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1355.
Authorize a competitive request for proposal process for computer-aided dispatch replacement system for the Bureau of Emergency Communications.
Morning.
Morning.
My name is Mark Granke. I'm the interim director for the Bureau of Technology Services. I'm here today to seek your approval to authorize BTS to, on behalf of the Bureau of Emergency Communications, to issue a competitive request for proposals to select a replacement computer-aided dispatch system, commonly referred to CAD. The CAD replacement project is one component of a larger initiative to address several of the city's aging public safety technology infrastructure systems. These include the city's 800 megahertz radio system as well as the Portland Police data system. The Bureau of Emergency Communication CAD system supports the delivery of critical dispatch services for over 700,000 citizens in Multnomah County, including the citizens of Portland, Gresham, as well as several other Eastern County municipalities. The current CAD system was implemented in 1994 and presents several challenges. The hardware platform will no longer be supported by the vendor, Hewlett-Packard, beginning in 2011. Due to a high degree of in-house customizations, the CAD software is no longer supported by the original CAD vendor, and therefore software support is only available from two City of Portland programmers. These programmers are rapidly approaching eligibility for retirement, and therefore lack of personnel available on the job market with skills needed to continue to support this critical system. Also, due to the age of the underlying software architecture, it's extremely difficult to integrate our existing CAD system with current generation public safety technologies and systems. The following options were considered to address these challenges. Those include porting the existing CAD software to a newer hardware platform, developing a custom in-house solution, as well, finally, as replacing the current CAD system with a vendor-supported and commercial off-the-shelf platform. Our analysis clearly indicated that moving to a commercial off-the-shelf system is in the best interest of the city. The primary benefits include ongoing vendor maintenance and support, which is not at a risk due to city employee turnover, as well as enhanced capabilities to integrate our CAD system with other public safety systems of the city as well as our partners. Our request today is to seek your approval to issue a competitive request for proposals. Due to the complexity of the system and its critical functions, it's anticipated the selection and contract negotiations will take anywhere from 6 to 8 months to complete. At the conclusion of the competitive selection, we return to Council with the assistance of the Bureau of Purchases to seek your approval for a final selection. With me today is Lisa Turley, Director of the Bureau of Emergency Communications. We're happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Questions from the commissioners.
Is this a the type of a project that largely is going to be done by whoever the vendor is, and therefore not many opportunities for subcontracting?
Well, I think there's opportunities for subcontracting with the vendor.
Oh, yeah.
And the vendor will be the supplier of the software and hardware as well as the integrator.
So there will be some subcontracting opportunities.
We anticipate that.
And when we started off on looking at the entire system, the Public Safety System Revitalization Project, we all agreed that the CAD system was the first that needed to be replaced, and this is sort of the first stage of getting to that replacement, and it is sorely needed. So, was anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
I did not have a sign-up sheet.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this matter? It's an emergency. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
I totally agree with the mayor. This is really an important project, and it further helps us get help to the citizens as quickly as possible. And I want to take this opportunity to publicly acknowledge the work that Lisa has done since June that has resulted in historic lows in holding times out at the 911 center. It has been, I get weekly updates, and it is just amazing that with some of the tweaks in protocols and one little technological change, what we've been able to do. So I want to thank you very much for your great work, and I have a lot of confidence that you'll do just as good a job on this. Thank you. Aye.
Saltzman.
Good work. This is a very important replacement. Aye.
Sten.
Aye.
Potter.
Thanks, folks. Aye.
Thank you.
Item 1356.
Vacate portions of Southwest Hillsdale Court at Southwest 43rd Avenue, south of Southwest Beaverton Hillsdale Highway, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Mr. Mayor, with your permission, if we could hold this till the last item on the agenda. We have the parties locked up in a room in my office trying to come up with a compromise.
Okay. Please read item 1357.
Grant a franchise to Quest Broadband Services, Inc. to operate a cable system.
Second reading, please call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Leonard.
I appreciate the competition. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to welcome Quest into the world of video communication services, and we hope to see your services and products soon. I want to thank the cable office, including David Olson and Mary Beth Henry, Ben Walters on the city attorney's office, as well as representatives on the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, and then finally Shannon Callahan of my own office. So it's good work, and we look forward to seeing you in the marketplace soon. Aye.
Sten.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. The chief is now here, so we will return. So chief, would you please come forward along with Dave?
1350?
Yes.
1350, pay claim of estate of Raymond D. Guerter.
Dave explained it from the city attorney's office. One of the things that we'd like you to do, Chief, is to go over the changes that have come about, what you've implemented in the police bureau since this incident.
Okay. Good morning, Mayor, Councilman. In the shooting of Raymond Guerter on November 5th, 2005, the Portland police response could have been better. Because that response could have been better, I feel it is the right thing to do for our city, the police bureau, and the Guerter family to resolve this incident instead of going to trial. We believe that the actual shooting of Mr. Guerter was justified under police bureau policy and under state law. A grand jury found the shooting justified under state law. A use of force review panel made up of command personnel, peer level officers, and citizens found the shooting within police bureau policy. As chief of police, I have undertaken several changes to our CERT, that special emergency response team, and hostage negotiation team operations as a result of this incident. The Portland Police Bureau commissioned a review of CERT and HNT capabilities by Ron McCarthy, a nationally recognized expert in high-risk incident handling. Mr. McCarthy found the police bureau met or exceeded contemporary guidelines and practice within the field of law enforcement in response to critical incidents and armed and dangerous offenders. Even with this assessment, over a year ago, the Portland Police Bureau made significant improvements to our CERT and HNT structure and capability. We changed the critical incident command system. Formerly, incident commanders were automatically the commander of the precinct in which the event was occurring. To serve as critical incident commanders now, we have selected a cadre of command personnel known for their capabilities in handling high-risk incidents, and we have provided them with specialized and ongoing training. For the first time in Portland Police Bureau history, we have assigned a full-time position to the training and development of the hostage negotiations team. We have co-located that sergeant with the CERT sergeant in the Tactical Operations Division, thus ensuring ongoing training is better coordinated and communication exists on an ongoing basis between the two teams. We have purchased new equipment for H&T, widened the recruitment pool, and have made available to the team the services of the new civilian crisis intervention team coordinator, a trained mental health professional for CERT and H&T callouts. I feel that the police bureau's capacity to respond to the highest risk incident is significantly better today because of these changes. They are among the changes that I am most proud in my year and a half tenure as chief of police. The outcome of the events that ended with Mr. Gorder's death might have been different had these changes been in place, had our response been more coordinated and communications been improved. There are, however, no guarantees. Any system may break down. I cannot guarantee that the police bureau will always perform perfectly, nor can we control all of the variables that make such incidents so difficult and risky. I can, however, ensure that the police bureau can and will learn as an organization with a goal of providing the best and most professional services to the citizens of Portland.
Questions?
Thank you, Chief Sizer. When I was first briefed about this settlement, I asked to meet with the chief because of concerns I had about the case, and she gave me a very detailed explanation, and then subsequently I met with the person in charge of the SWAT team, CERT team,
yeah,
who gave me an even more detailed explanation, and I really appreciated that. I think this is the right decision to settle this case. I totally agree with Chief Sizer, but in the discussion that's happened in the last few days out in the community, I just want to make sure I had this right, because I hadn't heard this talked about in the community. The man who was ultimately killed had a gun and did discharge it outside?
That
Do
was
we know
the
that?
Information, yes.
That's correct, okay. Your Honor.
And then the... because I don't think that's been reported. I mean, he was. It's unfortunate, and I think we should settle the case. But he did discharge a gun outside, in the information I had, which in no way justifies killing him necessarily. But it does heighten the concern in the community when there are bullets flying around neighborhoods. And secondly, there was an issue that we discussed in my briefing that I wondered if you could clarify for the record too. And it was immediately after he was shot. I have read that that he was alive for some 20 minutes or so afterwards, yeah, and the information I got in my briefing indicated that there was some error that led to the conclusion that that was true.
Commissioner, it was a theory of the plaintiff that Mr. Gorder had lived for some period of time after he was shot. Now, there's a legal purpose in that theory, and it has to do with the wrongful death claim and damages for what's called conscious pain and suffering. And as a matter of law, the plaintiff would have to prove that the decedent lived for some period after the injury that causes the death, causes the death, and then prove those damages. So that was an allegation they had made. The information that we have from the medical examiner that was in the autopsy report was that the shot, the single shot fired by a member of the police bureau that hit Mr. Gorder. There were only two shots fired that day, one by Mr. Gorder and one by one of our officers. Was that shot entered Mr. Gorder's back or side near the corner of his shoulder blade, passed through his chest, and exited on the right side underneath his armpit, and that it severed his heart from his blood vessels. So I'm not a doctor, and I don't have any medical expertise, but the evidence that we had suggested that Mr. Gorder did not live for 20 minutes, probably didn't live for a couple of minutes.
I just thought it important to get those two items on the record because of the community conversation that's been happening and probably will happen after this vote today.
Thank you, very well.
Further questions of the chief or Dave? Thank you, folks. Did you say we had one individual signed
Dan
up?
Dan Hendelman.
Thank you for being here. Please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes.
Good morning, Mayor Potter and Commissioners. I'm Dan Hendelman with Portland Cop Watch. And I am not here to argue with the idea of a monetary settlement for Mr. Gwerter's family. And I'm glad to hear there have been policy changes that have been talked about, and particularly that crisis intervention team is talking with the hostage negotiation team. However, about a month and a half ago, or 2 months ago, at the end of August, a man named Leslie Stewart was involved in a situation where the hostage negotiation team was on the phone with him, I understand, when a CERT sniper fired through a window at him, and he was injured by either the bullet or a piece of flying glass, is what the newspapers reported. So it seems like even though 2 years have passed and these changes have been made, that it didn't really affect anything except that in this case, Mr. Stewart lived. And not a lot of talk has happened about that case since then. But I'm hoping these changes are real. Part of the issue, I think, might be the individual officers are being trained to be snipers, which is something I don't know most people in Portland realize, that we have snipers on our Portland Police Bureau. And this particular officer, in this case, Officer Leo Besner, has a long history that's been recounted in the newspapers about several violent incidents that have been settled with a protester, with a young woman at a TriMet stop, with an elderly man who was trying to wrestle a knife away from a woman. He got tasered by Officer Besner. And part of the problem, I think, is that we don't look enough at what's going to happen to the officer in these cases. And Chief Sizer just said that Officer Besner's actions were found to be within policy by a review system that had some citizens in it. And we're currently, the city is reviewing the entire reviews, the IPR, the Independent Police Review Division, to see how it works. And we have said for many years that we don't understand why we have one set of rules for people who are involved in shootings, and they go through this one system, and then we have another system for people who get roughed up, say, at a TriMet station or get tasered, and that they get handled in a different situation. We would like to see more integration and more citizen involvement in the oversight, particularly with officers like Officer Besner. And in January, that report, I guess, is coming before you about the IPR and the CRC, and we have no idea if that's going to be part of it. But the IPR did adopt a system where they are now looking at any tort claim as though it was some kind of a complaint against an officer. But I believe that when that comes to shootings and deaths, they also handle it differently. And I don't think that should be the case. I think any time an officer's behavior is in question about whether they had engaged in misconduct, and that should include their past history, that the same Citizen Review Committee, the same Civilian Review Board should be looking at these incidents that look at the more minor incidents. So thank you for your time.
Is that it?
That's all.
Okay. Please call the vote.
Adams?
I appreciate Chief Sizer's statement and comments and your commitment to continuous improvement in your organization. It sounds like this is a settlement that most all agree is appropriate. Aye.
Leonard?
And I had grave concerns about the facts of this case, as some in the community have, and it was refreshing to me when I met with Chief Sizer that she shared those concerns. And it was one thing for her to express to me that she shared some of those concerns. It was another to actually explain to me in detail, and then even further detail from the CERT commander, the specific actions that have been taken to attempt to avoid these kinds of incidents again in the future. But having said that, I mean, it's important to recognize that the police are charged with safeguarding our community. And it's sometimes quick for us to conclude that their motives are less than honorable. But I don't even think in this case, given that the suspect was had discharged a gun outside, that we can completely exonerate him from any responsibility for what happened. It's tragic that the outcome occurred the way it did. It should not have. That's why I support this settlement. But I think the community needs to look at this incident in the context within which it